I just finished recording an interview with Rob Roseman, who is author of Dad the Best I Can, and also founder or co-founder of KickstartReading.com. I think you'll find this an interesting talk, not that much about e-commerce, but he actually wrote a book and has a podcast with entrepreneurs, CEOs, and people who are dads on sort of how they prioritize their time and be able to execute both in business and in their family life. We did get into talking a little bit also about audience building and using content to build an audience and sell, you know, physical products. So I think you'll find the conversation interesting. And today's podcast, it's actually kind of fitting because this is an episode I did about, you know, sort of like being a dad. And the podcast is dedicated to Yudi, Bring Yudi Home, I think is the website. Bring Yudi Home, bring Y-U-D-I home.com. I think there's a campaign going. It's only live for the next 24 hours to raise money. It's a friend of a friend who has been in the hospital with COVID for the last 5.5 months. Yesterday, for the first time, just saw his oldest son. He's got 6 kids. That's a site to raise money. But, you know, whether or not it's not to get you necessarily to donate, but, you know, not to take life, you know, for granted, because you never know what tomorrow brings. And so, I made a post on my Facebook wall, if you check it out, just, yesterday, around, some of his story. So you could check that out. And, the episode is, dedicated, to him. Check out that website if you do want to help and, donate, and enjoy this episode with, Rob Roseman of Kickstart Reading and author of Dad the Best I Can. Okay, so we have with us today on the show Rob Roseman. He is the author of a new book. We'll talk about, he's actually a notorious TV game show contestant. I want to hear more about that. Chicago Merc, futures trader, Vegas poker pro, entrepreneur, podcaster, author, and father of three. Of all those jobs, he's found being a dad has been the most challenging. Rob just wrote a book called Dad the Best I Can, Nuggets of Wisdom from Entrepreneur CEOs and 52 Other Dads. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Laren. I appreciate it. Yes. I hear that intro. It sounds like Forrest Gump when you compress it into 10 seconds.
And I didn't mention also you founded Kickstart Reading with your daughter. It's interesting, you know, to share some context of how we met in some of the small worlds of networking and interest. And, you know, this episode will have some e-commerce, but will mostly be sort of a mindset, you know, episode. And I think especially good for dads. So you actually said you saw me, but I don't really remember, embarrassingly, when you went running, I guess, as well with, or you saw me running with Jesse Itzler in February.
I showed up to that last minute. I was like, I'm not doing this. This is crazy. And then, next thing I know, I was running 5 miles talking to Jesse, and I didn't realize it was you, but I saw you there. And then, you know, like a month later, I was like, oh, I think I put the name to the face with the Florida connection, the Amazon and everything. So yeah. The 6 degrees of Jesse Itzler, he spreads, spreads everywhere.
Yeah. I then sort of first interacted with you in I bought a course called copywriting course, that's with a K, and you were asking some question about, I think, Amazon or e-commerce or something. You know, I think I offered some words of wisdom, maybe, I don't know. But I think I offered to help a little bit. And then we connected on Facebook, and that's on your website, Kickstart Reading. I think it's like a videos for kids to learn. And I think you were looking to sort of turn that into also e-commerce in terms of creating physical products.
That's right. Yeah. KickstartReading.com. My sister and I actually created it. She's the teacher. And when my kid was learning to read, I had no clue what I was doing. And asked her to help, and she made like a 2-minute video. And I said, these are really good. Would you make more of them and show your friends? And, you know, next thing you know, she made 100 videos. We have built a little business, and we're on Amazon Prime Video actually now too. Wow. So, and like you said, we're creating a product around it. So yeah, it's been a neat kind of learn as you go experience. And as you know, with the world of virtual school now being the new normal, it's been really good for business. Not good for our sanity, but good for business.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So, and we'll talk about, I want to talk about that. And you're hosting also a new podcast on, Jesse has a new channel, a new app called BYLR, which stands for Build Your Life Resume, BYLR Radio. And you're going to be hosting a podcast on there. Is the podcast called Dad the Best I Can, or is it what's the name of the podcast?
Yeah, so it's the same podcast, Dad the Best I Can, where I interview entrepreneur, CEO, regular dads, and kind of talk to them about dad life. And I was fortunate enough to be included. He picked like 10 podcasts out of over 500.
Yep.
And so we're moving the podcast over there, and it's going to be really exciting. As you know, anything Jesse puts his mind to, he makes it happen. So I'm just excited to learn from him and, you know, be able to connect with his audience and everything. I'm excited.
Yeah. And I know that it's probably wasn't easy to get picked to have your podcast on there, because I probably sent Jesse and a couple people on his team several messages about putting my podcast there, but it didn't fly. So, yeah. It means definitely means something that, you know, that he added it to the channel. So I guess let's talk about that. I mean, you know, the CEOs have bigger challenges in being a good dad than the average dad, or do you see them sort of parenting in a different way than, let's say, non CEOs? Or like what are some of the things you know that maybe you can sort of extract from the book in terms of interviews?
Yeah, it's a good question, because that was kind of my question that I went into it. How are these guys pulling it off? Specifically Jesse, who, you know, is running 100-mile races. He's got companies. He's a part owner of the Hawks, but he's got 4 kids under 10. And I see him all the time. He's documenting how much time he spends with them, how he prioritizes it. And I was like, I'm sure you're like this too, like finding that these moments where you can spend quiet time with your kid or intentional time is very hard. So Jesse was really the first person I wanted to talk to about that. And he really stressed how important like scheduling it is, prioritizing it. So he would even, you know, from 4 to 5, he's going to write down in his calendar, he's taking his kid to the basketball court, and they're just going to, you know, shoot hoops out there. So it was really eye opening to see how they do it.
And it's nice when you have a basketball court in your house too.
that's true. But you look at his videos, he's like out at the park. I mean, he really walks the walk. That is my first instinct actually to say, oh, must be nice. You know, and I think that about a lot of these guys that have it. But and I'm sure there is an element of that. But like, he really is. I don't even think he's human, to be honest. I don't know how he gets that it maxes out what his day is. But what I found is a lot of these guys, and I talked to like David Cancel from Drift, that they could run $100 million companies, but you know, a lot of them are dads. And when they get home from a day of work, their kids are whining, their wife's exhausted. Like they are just like us, and they're you know, it's challenging for them too. So I think that really humanized it and made me feel better knowing that like, oh, these guys don't have it all figured out. But also like David's, I asked for a dad tip on every episode, and David's was really interesting. He said, you know, he's got 2 kids, maybe 13 and 9, I think. And he said at the beginning, he was trying to do everything. He was trying to do mornings. He was trying to do nights because he had guilt for not being there and he wanted to. And he said a big turning point for him was he decided he needed to choose mornings or nights that he was going to be there. So he said, every morning I'm getting up early, I'm cooking breakfast for my kid, eating with them, sitting there, taking them to school, doing what I have to do. And that's his thing. That's his time that he carved out. Whereas it was hard for him to make it home because he had events, he had to travel and thing for travel for nights. So that really alleviated, I think, a lot of his guilt, because he knew he was committed to one thing. And you know how it is as a parent, we're always kind of winging it. And there's always an activity that can take us away from something. But I think really being intentional about how you spend your time and kind of making these non-negotiable things is important, because there's just, there's so much coming at us, especially today.
So kind of like I think a good sort of nugget there is, you know, scheduling things, even though it seems kind of, you know, it seems a little not as exciting or like maybe forced, like, okay, 4 to 5, I'm going to spend time with my kids. But when you put it on your calendar, it means somebody can schedule a call on your calendar, or, right, you can't get sort of pulled into something else, and allows you, just like probably if you want to exercise and you want to make sure you're doing it several times a week, putting it on your calendar is going to be what it takes in order to get you to take the time away and to do it. And, you know, you can kind of say, I would imagine most people are not putting on their calendar. They're putting their meetings, and they're not putting their sort of scheduling time, you know, with the kids, you know, on the calendar.
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, Laren, you can relate to this, entrepreneur especially, which is, there's always more you can do. You know, mm-hmm. I struggle with this too, whether it's, you know, social media, which I have very mixed feelings about, but I know it's important. There's always more you can post. You can build content, you know, especially if you're following like Gary Vee, who's, you know, excellent, but that can, you know, as a parent, that can be very challenging. So I think like we need to have these times where, you know, and I talk a big game, but I'm failing at it every day too, putting my phone down. Mm-hmm. So it's like from 4, or when the kids wake up and I'm watching some random episode of Curious George with them, mm-hmm. it's tempting to sit there and be on my phone. I'm still doing it probably more than I should, but for that moment, it might be, okay, there's, you're not even allowed to touch this thing. So I think that's something I really struggle with, is like, there's always more I can be doing for my business, for, you know, what I'm trying to move forward, but I need to, like, you need to be able to say no, and you need to take time for your kids, but you also need to take time for yourself. And I think that's another thing I really, that resonates throughout the book, is, you know, taking care of yourself as a dad, but also as a person, having time with your friends, having time with your spouse, all these things that we kind of took for granted and now seem as more challenging than ever.
Right. And I mean, have you seen it get, I mean, I don't know what you've seen, but like, or when you conducted the interviews, if any of it was sort of during this pandemic that we're in, but has it in a sense been easier or harder? I mean, I know for my family, you know, everybody's at home. So like my daughter's not going to school, and this summer her camp was canceled. And so it's sort of easier in some ways to get that sort of 10 minutes in of spending some time together during the day, or, you know, going and giving her a hug in the middle of the day is kind of nice. At the same time, you know, parents are working and can't give time to their kids, and just juggling a lot of stuff. So, I mean, have you seen it be sort of more challenging, or an opportunity for people to spend more time together as a family?
Yeah, I think it's a little of both, because I think, as you know, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of people that are used to going to the office every day, and being home, while it does have plenty of benefits, it's challenging as well, where you need that quiet time where you're working. I know we're even recording the podcast. It's like all of a sudden you have to shut a door to a room because there's a kid screaming about something. Mm-hmm. So I think it presents there are a lot of benefits from it, but I think it's also challenging and like brand new for us. So I think everybody is trying to figure out. And then we also have that guilt. I'm home, but why do I want to be away from my family right now? And not to feel bad about that, because this is kind of a new normal that we're all just figuring out. So I think it's what I take some comfort in is hearing these other people struggling with the same things, because as you know, as a parent and as an entrepreneur, you always feel like you're kind of the only one going through it. You know, you're the only one whose, you know, kid is only wants to eat chips for breakfast, mm-hmm. and your, you know, wife has just had enough at the end of the day. But I think knowing that everyone's going through it is helpful, and also just trying to get a little better every day and not expecting miracles. You know, like if you could get a, you know, 5 to 10% improvement on how long something bothers you. You know, as an example, if something used to bother you for 2 hours and now it can bother you for 15 minutes, I think that's a a big win. So, yeah, I think we're all just learning as we go, and we have to be kind to ourselves, because, you know, that's our biggest enemy, is kind of that self, self-hating and self-loathing and self-criticism that we're not doing enough. We're not doing enough for our kids. We're not doing enough for our business. And
I mean,
I think we need to like find that middle ground.
Do you think dads deal with more guilt than moms specifically in this area, or the opposite? Like, you know, dads, you know, I know I rely a lot on my wife, or you know, my daughter is bothering my wife way more during the day, during her Zoom meetings and stuff. And, you know, than she is me. I think it's, you know, more challenging. And also she works for a company. So it's a little bit, you know, I have my own business. So it's like, okay, I can kind of like take 15 minutes or 20 minutes or be bothered, or, and, you know, she's on a Zoom meeting for work. She can't necessarily get off. And, you know, my daughter is generally, I would say, more attached or more bothering her if she's like, hey, you know, mommy, I'm hungry, or whatever it is in the middle of the day, you know, to sort of, you know, dealing with the, I think in the pandemic challenges, probably women are facing more of the juggling and challenges.
Yeah, I mean, for one, I mean, I do think this experience gives all guys a lot more respect and admiration for what, you know, our wives and the moms to our kids are doing, because you see how hard it is, and you see how relentless and thankless it can be. So there is that piece. But I do think, and this was a kind of a big reason I started the podcast and then wrote the book, is I think moms do have kind of this community where they can, you know, vent to each other, or go to when they used to go on the bus, there'd be the bus stop talks or the book clubs where they drink wine together. And I think like that is very helpful when you can have that kind of camaraderie among moms. And that's one thing that, you know, all my friends have kids now pretty much. And we talk every day. We're on a WhatsApp group chat where we're cracking each other up and everything. But it's very rare that anybody really talks about the challenges, the highs and the lows of being a dad. So I think it can be very isolating, which I think, you know, and I think today dads are doing more in a lot of ways than any past generation, where we are with our kids more than ever. We are trying to create careers. We're trying to, you know, keep a good relationship with our spouse. We are trying to hang out with our friends. And then, you know, it'd be nice to take 30 minutes to yourself to watch an NBA basketball game or a TV show. So I think there's so much going on in today's world as a dad that's so great in so many ways, but I don't think we necessarily have enough dialogue about it. So I think that's important. And I think, you know, that's kind of what I'm hoping to achieve, is to open up these conversations among dads. So you can say, you know, what was it like today? How was your day today as a dad? What happened with your kid? Like, I never have that conversation with my friends, and I think it's helpful to have them.
Right. I never have that conversation either. It just, you know, most of the people I talk to, most of the dads or guys I talk to in like e-commerce and that I kind of deal with in business are the people I'm friends with. And most of them have kids, but most of what we talk about is like business, you know, and entrepreneurship, and and sometimes the struggles of entrepreneurships and the ups and downs. And we, you know, I do have some sort of close contacts that, you know, will kind of share the ups and downs, but not so much about dad life. It doesn't seem to be like a topic that, you know, that I guess a lot of dads do talk to each other about.
Your wife is having those conversations? I guess that is what's eye opening. I'm like, oh, I never talk about these things like you do. That's kind of cool.
I definitely my wife does talk to some of my daughter's friends' moms. And, you know, they're also the ones organizing things like play dates. And, you know, my daughter is six. So, yeah, she's talking to the moms. And, yeah, it's about, you know, what's coming up with school. And, you know, yeah, dealing with the challenges of having you know, working from home and having your kids at home and all this stuff. So yeah, my wife is definitely having more of those conversations with her, with other moms that are, you know, that are like my daughter's friends and her friends. And yes, for sure. And yeah, I don't find that I have a lot of those conversations, not because, I don't know, just not a thing. Like you said, a lot of dads are talking about. Which other, you know, what are some other interesting parenting, you know, parenting tips you got from parents, or did you talk to any CEOs or entrepreneurs that had a lot of regrets, you know, that had older kids and spent their entire life sort of grinding, you know, long work weeks and not, you know, and having a lot of regrets on time missed from, you know, parenting?
Yeah. And I think that is, you know, the main thing. And, you know, Jesse echoes it in the book, is like you hear about the billionaire that, you know, when he's at the end of his life, he's always talking about how he, you know, valued and treasured that time with his family, that time with his friends, and not about how much money he made and how big his business is. Mm-hmm. And it seems like we all pay lip service to that, but are we actually living that way? So I think, you know, since a lot of these guys are kind of more of an entrepreneurial mindset, granted they are, mm-hmm. if you're a CEO of a $100 million company, your day is pretty structured and jam-packed, but mm-hmm. I think they do find that important, whether it's the weekend they're going to unplug. But I don't know if I, you know, maybe if it's just survivorship bias that I ended up talking to people that did really prioritize that kind of thing. I'm sure right. There are plenty of dads that are just like going at it all day. They're coming home, they're having a drink, you know, by themselves, mm-hmm. watching a show, going to bed. And, you know, I think that, you know, you can't judge anybody. We're also learning what our parents did and that kind of thing. But I do think people, especially as dads, are more involved. It's almost like a new model we're kind of creating, and we don't fully know how to do it. So I think it's helpful to hear their struggles, but also hear little tricks of how they are prioritizing. I know I spoke to Sangram Vajray. He's a co-founder of Terminus, a big marketing software, and he talks about, he lives an hour away from work, and he was going to the office, he decided he's going to take Uber every day, which I know it can add up, and that's not something mm-hmm. that everybody can do, but his thinking is, I want to get all my emails done on the drive home, where I don't have to drive or worry about anything, mm-hmm. that way when I get home I can like put my phone down comfortably and not be pulled away from it. So, and yep. I know that sounds nice, and but there are plenty of times, even in my day, there's a better way I could have done this, or more efficiently, where I can, like, you know, be at my kid's baseball practice and not be checking my phone. It's just mm-hmm. kind of, you know, a lot of times we're checking our phone to soothe us, to make us feel better, to distract right. us from the, you know, just the tension and the frustration of everything that's going on. And I think like the first step is really just having awareness of that. Why am I checking my phone so much? Why am I refreshing my email? Like, yes, you could justify it always as, I need to see, you know, if this person wrote me back, or I need to right. get back to you. But I think in a lot of ways, we're doing it kind of out of habit. And it's something yep. that I think if we start to improve on, we really see the benefits of it.
Yeah, I think for a lot of us, including myself at times, the phone is like sort of this pacifier, right? Like you mm-hmm. can't go, you go somewhere without your phone, you forgot your phone somewhere, it's like panic, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, we, it's not something we've had forever. And, you know, growing up, we didn't, you know, didn't take a phone yeah. with me anywhere, and we were fine. But now, yeah, if you forget your phone at home and go somewhere, it's like, something's missing and you feel it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's like, Jesse has this concept that has resonated with me, because it's easy to sort of take in and try to implement, which is be where your feet are. And so I do try to be intentional. If I am, you know, if I'm playing Go Fish with my daughter, I will turn my phone over, you know, put it next to me and turn it over, or try to really just be there and not be somewhere else in my mind or in my phone. Certainly, like you said, is challenging. And I also fail at it, you know, a lot. I'll sometimes come give my daughter, you know, bedtime, you know, good night. And I'm, you know, I'm on my phone as I do that. Right. So, which, mm-hmm. which is terrible. But I think it is the reality of, you know, what happens. But I think having that awareness, a lot of times I will also stop myself from sort of that distraction with the phone. One of the things, you know, I started doing this year that maybe you'll find interesting is, you know, I grew up, my parents are Sabbath observers, Orthodox, and I kind of grew up with that. And this year I started, you know, I had a friend who said to me, hey, I'm doing a dopamine detox, digital detox, like once a week, I'm going off my phone for 24 hours, like on, you know, Sunday. And so my family started keeping Sabbath. And from Friday night now until Saturday night, don't touch any phone, any electronics, and really kind of started it as a say, okay, like this is going to be a discipline to not be on my phone and spend family time. But doing this since like May, and it's actually been really, really amazing. Like, I really look forward to that time because I know it's just like my phone stays in my office, and like for 24 hours, it's like, you know, I just know I'm not even going near it. I'm not touching it. It's not with me. And that's been really, really good family time, and sort of like, okay, this is like the time where I don't, you know, I don't get distracted. I'm spending family time. We're taking walks, we're playing games, we're, you know, we're doing stuff. And I feel like that's been a really good decision for me, even though, you know, it's something like, when I was a kid, it was forced on me, you know, sort of like, you know, my parents were religious, it was forced on me. And so like, I sort of rejected it, you know, when I got to like my teens, but then you kind of find that there's, you know, a lot of good in some of these concepts. And for me, that's been really good, like a really good way to spend family time and to get off, because yeah, you know, I'm on my phone at, you know, 9, 10, 11, I'm answering emails, I'm, you know, distracted a lot. But sort of taking some space out, and obviously you don't need to do that, but like taking a 12-hour period or taking a Sunday and just not being on social or not being on your phone and just kind of giving yourself some rules, I find is beneficial.
Yeah, that's awesome, and I really admire it. And I imagine, do you even like feel like relief when you put that phone down, because now you're like, there are rules where you're like, oh, I'm not allowed to touch it, and your blood pressure probably drops?
Tremendous relief. Like, it comes Friday now and it's, you know, 6, 7 PM. I never thought it would happen that way, but I'm really looking forward to just like putting the phone away. And you know, and I find myself also like I'm reading, you know, more, like I'm finishing, you know, at least a book a month now, because, you know, I'm taking a few hours on Saturday to read. And yeah, I'm really looking, you know, sort of looking forward to that time. My wife is much happier also, because I'm not, you know, like I might typically be at, you know, dinner with my phone, but, you know, that's not happening on, you know, Friday night and Saturday. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and, you know, it sort of didn't stem necessarily from like a religious, necessarily a big religious thing. It stemmed more from like just digital detox, but it's been working really well. And it's been one of the best things I've done this year. And I find, you know, I just find that, yeah, that setting some hard rules and some hard discipline is much easier than just saying, I'm not going to look at my phone, because that's so much, I feel like it's so much harder when, I mean, my phone doesn't, I mean, from the time I wake, I go to sleep listening to a podcast or listening to something, like literally with my phone on sleep timer next to me. And you know, from the time I wake up to the time I go to bed, that thing, you know, does not really leave my hands. And you know, constantly on it, you know, all day between my phone and my computer. So it's definitely nice to get some, sort of like, yeah, some relief. Did you find that the people you interviewed did have some of these, like, you know, yeah, like you said, more structure or discipline around how they live their life in general?
Yeah, I really think, you know, Jesse especially, and a lot of these guys, I think that you need to have that organizational, the ability to say no is the other thing that I really mm-hmm. found common theme. Devin Bandison, he's a coach, he's a dad, and he really talked about how we all have, you know, these people pleasing problems, kind of where we're saying yes to too many things. And really, by saying no, you're actually saying yes to the things that are important to you. And, you know, again, like, this is different because 10 years ago, when you didn't have kids, you could say yes to so many of these things and you weren't really taking away from anything. And now you know, nobody gives you a training manual when you're a parent. They drive away from the hospital. You're like, are they really letting us leave with this kid? Like, it's it's crazy. So I think these are new skills we have to learn. And, you know, what you, especially when you talked about the phone, you know, this is like 10 years in the history of thousands of years, millions of years of being human, that we have this new in our pocket device taking our attention away from us. So I think all these things are a whole new frontier. And I think we do need to have these kind of new, you know, rules. And like you said, it's, you know, for thousands of years, people were taking Friday night Sabbath off, and maybe there's a reason for it. Right. It's like, oh, it's back in vogue now. All of a sudden we need to not have electronics. It's going to be a little more challenging to convince my kids not to use the iPad and to have to entertain them. That's actually where I struggle. Yeah. I'm like, can't you guys figure out something to play where I don't need to? But but maybe I might have to borrow that one and say, and say for this block of time, it might not even be a day. That's the other thing too. It might be like, okay, from dinner until bedtime. Well, we always watch a show at bedtime, but you know, something smaller, get that, like, okay, we did it. You know, it wasn't that
right.
Hard.
I mean, yeah, I find we are, you know, playing card games, board games, stuff like that. And also I happen to live kind of like in a Jewish neighborhood. So, you know, there's a lot of like play dates, you know, walking to other kids' houses. And this past weekend she went into like, you know, a kid's backyard pool, you know, we walked over and stuff. So she's, you know, she's got some good entertainment and sort of within sort of like the, you know, we live in Jewish community. So kind of it's a little bit easier in terms of finding stuff for her to do and entertain herself. Yeah, I think also going back to the ability to say no and people pleasing definitely resonates. And, you know, I follow Derek Sivers, who, you know, I think he says, you know, early in your life, you want to say yes to everything because you want to sort of find the right opportunity for you. But then as you get older and you're already doing a lot of things, you know, he's got a new book that's coming out that's called Hell Yes or No. That is basically like, if it's not a hell yes, then, you know, it should be a no. And yeah, I think it's a good way to sort of think about if I say yes to this, what am I saying no to? Or, you know, what am I giving up? In terms of saying no, especially I feel like for entrepreneurs, I talk to a lot of people in e-commerce and the Amazon game, and, you know, there's a lot of shiny object, you know, syndrome of, you know, I have friends that are like doing very well with their brands, but because they know Amazon well, they get people who, you know, approach them and say, hey, can you help me with my brand? Can you manage my brand? And like, sometimes a lot of it is a distraction, not necessarily an opportunity, but I think it's also good to ask yourself, like, is this a distraction or is it an opportunity? And sometimes it's, you know, I feel like it's difficult because I feel like as entrepreneurs, we kind of want to grab as much, you know, like grab as much of pies, even if we can't eat the entire pie. I feel like, including myself, sometimes not knowing always what is the right opportunity to say yes to and what is, you know, what's not necessarily the right opportunity. Have you found, I mean, you're involved in a variety of things, sounds like, too, right? You have the you're doing the podcast, you have the Kickstart reading, Dad the Best I Can, right, you know, and are you doing some other things in business aside from that?
Well, right now it's the podcast, the book, and really it's the three kids. I used to be a professional poker player in Vegas, and I moved here for my now ex-wife, but my kid's mom's career, and that was a big change for me. And it's kind of when I got into this entrepreneur, you know, world, hearing people like Derek Sivers and stuff, I wanted to get into it. So doing a lot, have a lot of different balls in the air, but, you know, end of the day, it's the three kids is going to keep you busy. So that's the main focus right now. But at the same time, and, you know, I get this a lot from Jesse and Derek, it's like, even if you don't know what you're doing, just taking action of some kind every day.
Right.
I think that's been important for me, getting out of this idea phase. You know, I heard even in your podcast where you're talking about the Sivers book, it's like, you know, how many people say they want to write a book or start a podcast or do something? And it's like, and that was me forever. And then I just said, you know, screw it. I just need to do this. And even if it sucks, even if nobody listens to it or reads it, just that like habit has been really, really important and helpful and addictive. And look, I mean, 2020, craziest year of all time. And plus, I'm recently divorced. Mm-hmm. I've got three kids. We got this whole school thing. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to get something out of this year, and I'm going to get this book shipped. And actually, that was credit to Nev and his team at Copywriting Course. It was like, you put a deadline on that thing. He's like, I don't want to hear from you unless on August 1st, your book is published. Mm-hmm. And it was like scary to think, but I was like, I hit publish on Amazon KDP, and I'll be honest, my book came back with the title. The cover was misspelled. I was like, oh my God, this is mortifying. Right. And luckily you can change that on KDP, but it was kind of like, it gets your blood flowing. It's like taking action and being willing to mess up, I think, is a really great skill to cultivate.
How hard is it to write a book? I mean, how long did it take you? What's, you know, and you self-published also.
Yeah. So it was, you know, something I, you know, always thought would be cool, especially when I had the podcast. I was like, God, I have all this incredible content from these dads and entrepreneurs that, you know, I'm selfishly getting so much out of it. I was like, this would be really cool to share this in another form. So, you know, again, I was in that idea phase, and it wasn't until I was in Copywriting Course that Nev Medora said, you know, he's like showed how he took essentially a Google Doc and turned it into a Kindle book and a paperback book. Now you can do so. It's really much simpler than you think. You know, the writing part is hard, but I think setting, you know, deadlines and just trying to knock out a little bit each day is important. But today, especially with a little help from Fiverr on some of the technical things, I would get like somebody to help format it, but incredibly easy. And I was absolutely, when that book came in the mail, when I got my proof, which again was misspelled, which was a little scary, but it was like, holy crap, I cannot believe you're seeing your name in print. So a really cool thing that I'm glad I did. And I advise anybody, if they are thinking about writing a book, like just give it a shot, knock out and get on a Google Doc, start writing. And then the rest of it's actually much easier than you think. And it's incredibly rewarding to see your work. And in my case, really being able to share 50 other dads' names, they're stoked about it. Seeing like their tip of this little snapshot of when they were, you know, 45 years old and they had a 5-year-old. I think that's really neat that they'll be able to look back and see that in print. Right.
And it's something that sort of lives on, you know, with you and without you, you know, in the world, right. That you can sort of leave behind. That's, I think, different than a podcast or a website or something like that. Like it's a physical book, you know, that you write that kind of stays on. So, you know, it's nice. So did you essentially kind of take your sort of nuggets from these podcast interviews and turn that into the book?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I try to, I don't know about you, but I hear a podcast, there's usually, even if it's the greatest thing in the world, there's usually like three things max that I really take from it. And that, to me, that's also worth it. You know, Joe Rogan is a 2-hour podcast and it's hard to sit through it all, but if you take one thing from it, I think that's a great, great win. And I was noticing in these podcasts, these dads would say like a couple things that I'm like, oh my, I'm going to use that today with my kids. So I actually cut them as clips for the podcast to make them like easy for people to not have to sit through a whole episode. So I had all those, and then I had them transcribed, which I could do on, you know, actually it was a free software, which was really helpful. And then I had all this content, and then it was just laying it out. And then, you know, the hard part, staring at the blank screen when I had to write the intro, which the intro was like from a month ago when I was like at a water park with my three kids. I was like, that was a kind of a cool story that really is a good metaphor for what dads are going through. So I spit that out, had a friend help me edit it, and, you know, the rest was history.
That's awesome. And so have you sort of used, I mean, so you're using kind of content, obviously. Is there a monetization of the podcast? Like you got the book, you have the podcast. Is there sort of like back end, you know, monetization or something coming from that as like a business around it, or is this generally just like a fun thing you like to do and you know, just kind of doing it as a hobby?
Yeah, that is a hard thing. And that's literally the first question everybody wants to know is, how many listeners do you have? How many sponsors do you have? How much are you getting paid for this? And, you know, sheepishly, you're kind of like, No, I don't. You know, it'd be right. nice, but I know even Tim Ferriss says, like, don't even think about that stuff for the first year of your podcast. Worry about getting good content, getting an audience, and then figuring it out. And then, you know, like a lot of things, I know Gary Vee really preaches, just, you know, creating content and documenting your life and kind of showing that you're a mm-hmm. human will be beneficial because people will trust you more and know you and know, you know, Liron's a dad. And like, I do want to work with him because I hear how relatable he right. is. So there wasn't anything intentional. Now that I think about it, I did kind of my little small monetization strategy was, what if I use my sister and I had this brand new company, Kickstart Reading. I was like, what if I make them the mm-hmm. sponsor? So that was like a little like 30-second kind of little ad I could yep. read and say, oh, if you've got kids between the ages of 3 and 7 and they're learning how to read, go to kickstartreading.com. So that was kind of a neat little thing. But I think the main thing is just the habit of creating, and then the people that you're meeting, all of these things, they're not like a direct monetary gain, which is hard for, mm-hmm. you know, everybody. I mean, I used to be a trader and a poker player, so it was very much, you know, if you won a hand, if you made a good trade, you made money right. or you lost money. So it's very hard to pour a lot of time into these kind of things. But I think
that's a great, you know, that's a great idea. I think it's a podcast geared to dads. And so, you know, using that as a vehicle for, you know, making Kickstart Reading a sponsor, you know, of the show, you know, makes a lot of sense to me because you're talking to dads and probably a good segment of them have younger kids, and you know, you can that's a, you know, to me that's a great way to make that business a sponsor and being sort of the top of the funnel, you know, content strategy for Kickstart Reading.
Yeah, and I this is something that I don't know if you struggle with or people in your audience struggle with. I still struggle with it. It's like, you know, I was never much of a social media user or anything. And when you do dip your toe in, it's, you know, it's intimidating. But I think we all have this kind of like desire to, you know, go viral or have a million people mm-hmm. like this or share this. And the reality is you're not going to get that. And that can be kind of demoralizing. Yep. But I think what I've slowly learned, and I have to remind myself every day when I spend an hour on Instagram, like putting up a post and I'm like, oh man, is this the best use of my right. time? And you're not getting the kind of validation you want. But I think if you can connect with one person, really yeah. one dad or one person that like is interested in Amazon e-commerce. And if you had one listener to that episode and you helped him in some way, it's worthwhile. You know, it might not be what you were hoping for, but I think like, you do have to kind of, you know, look at it a little bit differently and really lower your expectations in a lot of ways. Cause you're just, if you're expecting everything you put out there to, for everybody to share and like, it's just, you're going to be demoralized every day because people are getting so much content. You could have the greatest thing in the world and they might not even see it because of some algorithm. Right.
No,
so
absolutely.
I think really lowering your expectations is a good one.
Definitely. And I think, you know, it's much better to have, you know, 100 raving fans, right, or 1,000, you know, raving fans than, you know, sort of like, you know, Kim Kardashian has millions, but how many of they're not as tuned in than somebody with 5,000 followers who, you know, is, I feel like, connects with their audience a lot more, and like they, you feel a certain like more relatable, like certain level of connection. I certainly don't have, you know, 100,000 followers, but I have a small group of people that follow me that is sort of more, you know, more, I guess, more connected and more engaged, I think is the right word, right? And so for a business like Kickstart Reading, you don't need, you know, 100,000 customers. If you had, you know, I don't know if it's a like a subscription or you know, or but you know, if you started with like 100 raving fans to 1,000 raving fans, like you can build a business around that, and you don't need to have, you know, millions of followers, I feel like, for to have a successful business. You just need people that are engaged. You know.
Yeah, Totally true. But I think also your audience, and this is the thing that I don't think really gets spoken about a lot, is that 0 to 10, that 0 to 100 is a lot of times the most challenging part. And that's when a lot of us want to quit. And I get that feeling. Everybody's like, oh, you got 1,000 fans. I'm like, 1,000 fans. That would be incredible. I don't know. You don't just snap your fingers and get to that. So I think I like hearing more of these people that really are just starting out and seeing, you know, how hard it is in the beginning and how, you know, and, you know, Jesse talks a lot about this too. It's like, most of these people, they're just, they're giving up, you know, you're not seeing the million people that have just given up before they even got to their 10 fans because it was hard.
I think you have to not be, I think you have to want to, or get some kind of benefit out of doing it, whether you have 10 or 100, in order to keep going. And if you're solely focused on a number of people in your audience, then you're gonna quit. I get sort of this, I get a benefit when I see, when I make a post and somebody says, hey, it's really helpful. If one person comments, you know, I get benefit. It brings me a certain level of fulfillment. Yeah. Like you said, a little bit somewhat selfishly, right? Like, it makes me feel good to get that, like or that, you know, that heart or that comment makes me feel good, whether it's one person, you know, or 100. And so I have a passion for just like sharing, like you said, and getting a benefit out of it. And it's selfishly, yes, getting a benefit out of it, but also it's helping other people. And so, you know, it's sort of made me consistent over the last 5 or 6 years, and still don't have, like, you know, tremendously huge following, but now I have somewhat of a following. And it's just been because I've been posting and putting out content sort of like no matter what, or early when nobody, you know, nobody was following it. But, you know, over time, if you're consistent and you keep putting it in, you know, they say your success is kind of like around the corner from, you know, from when you're about to quit. But you can't be sort of focused on the numbers only, because there are strategies, right? If you do want to grow that audience, you know, bringing on like a Jesse Itzler on your podcast and having him share that is a good strategy for, you know, if somebody who has a big following is willing to share your content, that is going to be helpful to get you to be discovered more. So there are things you could do, but I think you just have to have sort of a passion for just what you're doing in the first place for you to want to keep doing it. But I think it's a, you know, I think sort of using, you know, sort of one business as a sponsor of the other business that relates to each other from a content strategy makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, I think also a lot of people in e-commerce are not sort of thinking that way. And I think something people can take away from this is that, you know, if you're selling a product, what, you know, can you develop a podcast around it? Can you develop content around it? And then, make that product a sponsor of your podcast. And I almost think with almost any physical type product, there's an audience that, you know, that is interested in that, you know, if you're selling, you know, a barbecue sauce, you know, you can have a show around cooking, you know, and make the barbecue sauce a sponsor of the show, et cetera. And then find out what your audience wants and develop more products. And I think not enough people are using content and podcasts or books even to monetize their physical product business.
Yeah, I mean, and I kind of thought about this before, but you reminded me. If I, you know, and saying everybody create content, I actually think it's a lot harder than it looks. It doesn't have to be good. It could be you just talking on your iPhone, but, you know, it's intimidating for a lot of us. But it could be maybe go find a podcast and don't even look for anybody big, because you have no chance at them. Go find somebody that has 5 reviews, but they're talking about grilling out, and be like, oh, I really like listening to your podcast. I'd be happy to offer one of my products for free if you could just mention it. You know, you don't even have to get into be a sponsor. You don't have to pay a lot of money. But, you know, I'd be ecstatic if somebody came to me and they were like, oh, I've got this cool dad thing. Could you mention it on the show? I'd be happy to give one out. So even draft off of other people's content, because I think that is the one thing, is there is a lot of kind of, you know, camaraderie out there where it's, yes, it is competitive, but I think a lot of people today are looking to help each other out because they know how hard it is, or they know how somebody helped them out. I know Jesse's big on that. He's always looking to prop up the little guys. So, you know, just being willing to put yourself out there, and kind of, you know, start really small. Don't say, I want to get on Joe Rogan. You have no right. chance of that. You know, you're going right. to be demoralized. But it could be like Joe's barbecue podcast that has 6 listeners. You get one guy to listen to it, right. you know, and he all of a sudden he buys your thing. He might tell his friends.
Yeah, so. I think absolutely. And I think, you know, if I had a product that was good for dads, I would draft an email to you and say, hey, I'm really, you know, here this year, I was really struggling with X, Y, and Z with my dad, with being a dad. And this is some of the stuff I've done and I've learned along the way. And I'd love to come on and share, you know, and yeah, I also have this product, you know, that maybe I could talk about that's helpful to dads, or grilling or whatever. Right. And like, I'd love to come on your show. And, you know, if you did that sort of as a strategy around your business and doing outreach, and I have these people also that pitch me and I get emails and they have like VAs and things, and they send out emails to, you know, to sort of pitch yourself on other people's podcasts, I think is another sort of like great strategy, because it is giving you, you know, it's giving you content, right, for your show, which if the content is good, it's a good thing. And then it gives the person access to the audience and the ability to, you know, talk about what they're doing. And I think it could be a big win-win. And again, something that I think people in e-commerce, especially Amazon sellers who are sort of somewhat lazy and relying a lot on Amazon traffic and Amazon ads only and not sort of audience building at all, are not doing enough of to, you know, get on podcasts, get, you know, work with influencers, reach out and build relationships, not just like, hey, can you promote this on your podcast? But like, hey, can I come and share this mm-hmm. and this and this with your audience, or reaching out to an influencer and say, hey, I'd love to send you my product. Just like, want, you know, I'd love to just send it to you, right? Just like build a relationship. Before, I had somebody on the podcast who has a website called BookBew, and they developed this zipper kind of cases for people to hold their books, people who get autographed books and just want to not get their books damaged in their book bags, etc. And all they did before they started is reached out to people who were influencers and followed this hashtag like Bookstagram on Instagram. All they did was reach out and say, hey, I'd love to send you my product. See what you think, you know, months in advance of really even sort of launching it. And then when they launched and they already sent these people their product and they liked it, they asked them if they would, you know, give a coupon code to their audience. And they built their whole sort of business on Kickstarter initially on the backs of that, that strategy of building relationships first and not just going to, you know, somebody to like, hey, can you promote this? Cause nobody wants to be pitched to just promote something.
Yeah. Right. Give value. I mean, that's one thing I would say. Also, I learned from Jesse is, and I got him, I'll be honest, I got him on the podcast because I sent him a book I thought he and his kids would like. And the other thing he says is like a little handwritten note goes a long way. There's so many, instead of crafting an email and blasting it to 100 people with the little, you know, personalized merge tag, that's what everybody's doing. But like, if I send you barbecue sauce and you like it and it comes in the mail and that's all it is, hey, Laren, I thought you'd like this. You're way more likely to, you're going to remember that first of all, and you're way more likely to want to give back than, you know, we're so inundated with all these requests and can't just make it about the other person, give and expect nothing in return. And you'll be surprised at what comes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think there's sort of a lesson there. And also like being somewhat persistent and sometimes not being afraid to ask, you know, like, yeah, Jesse is a super busy guy, but like you asked him and he came on, you know, and I'm sure there's some hesitation to, you know, because essentially he's doing you a favor, right? Like he doesn't need to go on your podcast to promote, right? Mm-hmm. He's kind of like doing you a solid because you're in his community and you asked him and you send him a book and you built somewhat of a relationship, and it's like kind of harder to say no. But sometimes, you know, it's also hard to make those asks. I actually, Derek Sivers, you know, was selling his book sort of pre-launch to his audience. I bought the book and emailed him and he emailed me back. And then after a few emails, I asked him if he would come on my podcast. And he's kind of like, well, no, not right now. I'm not doing podcasts right now, but ask me again in the fall. You know, I'm launching the book officially then. Maybe I'll come on. So, okay. So I'll wait and I'll ask him again in the fall. You know, I'm not going to bother him every week or get upset. I don't expect him to come on the podcast, but I'm also not afraid to at least ask. Even though I know it's a little bit of like, he doesn't need my few hundred listeners or so to, you know.
Yeah. And how cool is it? How cool. I did the same thing and he gave me the same line back. But oh my God, the fact that he personally wrote me back, I am a fan for life. So it's like him taking 30 seconds. I'll tell everybody, you got to follow this. He said no to me, you know, and it's just like, I don't care. He took the time out. So having that kind of, you know, personal connection, it really goes a long way. And, you know, if you ever get to Derek Sivers' side, there's a lesson you can learn as to, you know, stay humble and truly engage with your fans, because he knows that one person is very important and might inspire a lot of people.
Join his email list. He says, I respond to every email. And I think during the pandemic, he sent out an email to his entire list and was like, hey, if you need to talk or whatever, you know, and he said for 2 weeks straight, he was just responding to emails. And that, you know, that's amazing, right? That's somebody who cares about their audience. They're connecting. And yeah, when he sends an email out and says like, hey, I'm putting out a book, pre-order, like, do you want it or whatever? Like, I'm buying because like, I'm, you know, one, I like his work, but also like, I respect and value like the content that he puts out and, you know, how he sort of operates. He sold the company and sold the company and the sale went into a charitable trust, you know, and gave all the money away essentially and living off, I think, just some percentage of the money there, which is, yeah, pretty incredible. I think it's a good lesson to, you know, no matter sort of your level of success, to stay humble, be appreciative, you know, be appreciative for every single person that follows you, not to see, you know, in advertising and marketing. I remember when I learned in college, they called the advertising industry calls people eyeballs, you know, which is so crazy, right? Like, you know, just like that's sort of how they diminish, you know, the audience or the people who follow them into like, how many eyeballs did you get? Like, it's not even a human being. And I think that's how you lose the connection with, you know, with an audience.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but and I actually even try to teach my kids this. It's like, I kind of almost like seeing when people are, you know, so flippant or callous or don't care about it, because it gives me a competitive advantage. You know, look at, like, I even tell my kids, I'm like, if you can look a grown up in the eye and talk to him, you're already probably in the 90th percentile, because most of your friends or these other kids are like staring at their iPads. Right. And so like all these things that people are struggling with, when I get some crappy email that's like completely written by a bot and I'm going to delete it, I'm like, oh, that's good. All I have to do is like do a little bit better and actually connect personally. So I think there's a big opportunity for people. And, you know, in e-commerce, we're buying off of a lot of these products are the same, right? You're buying from a person, you're buying from a feeling. So I think people spending more time kind of creating that, I mean, that's the whole reason around content, is you want to, you know, elicit a good feeling when somebody buys from you. Not your toy is not necessarily that much better than somebody, but, you know, if I know who you are and I see you playing with your kids, or I see how you give to other people, you know, Tom shoes, like, why do people buy those? It's not because they're the greatest shoe ever. It's because they have an incredible mission and incredible story.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of lessons, you know, in just how to do good business and connect with people and an audience. So Rob, what's the best way for people to, you know, sort of follow you? I know there's, you're going to have a show on so you have your own podcast called Dad the Best I Can. That's also going to be on an app called BYLR Radio that has other shows that's going to be coming up. And then the book is also called Dad the Best I Can. Kickstartreading.com. That's helpful for if you have kids that want to learn how to read or need some help reading.
Yeah. Yeah, learning how to read. If you have kids there, definitely kickstart reading. The podcast is actually going exclusive to BYLR Radio, so I'm kind of excited about that. I'm like, it'll be in his world. And as you know, like, just being around, kind of listening to Jesse, I really highly recommend people go check it out, because even if you're not running a 100-mile race like he is, his passion is just contagious, and he's the real deal. So I think being around him and listening to him and seeing him walk the walk is a really cool thing. So Dad the Best I Can. I'm on Instagram when I can muster the strength to be on there, but that's the best place to find me. And I'd love, you know, anybody, especially dads out there or moms, to hop on Amazon and check out the book. I'm really proud of it. I don't love the self-promotion part of it, but this book is really just a collection of, you know, 50 other dads and their advice, and I guarantee, you know, you'll be shaking your head or laughing, or something will resonate with you from from their stories. So Dad, the best I can on Amazon. I appreciate
awesome.
It.
And actually I'm going to dedicate, you know, I usually make my own ads agency, the sponsor of every podcast. When I do the intro to this, I'm going to dedicate this show to a dad that's been in the hospital, 38 years old. He's got 6 kids, has been in the hospital with COVID for the last 5 months, and was finally taken off a ventilator like in the last couple of weeks, and was just able to see his oldest son. Just came to the hospital yesterday to see him. So I'm going to put a link when I do the intro to this. There's a site to kind of help the family and donate if you want to or can. I made a post on my Facebook wall about it yesterday. So, you know, you just never know. I think Jesse says, you know, you never know when the bus is going to stop, the bus, the ride, you know, of your life, and sort of taking things for granted. And, you know, I think you'll never feel bad about the extra time you took to, you know, spend with your family and, you know, spend with your kids. Yeah, thank you so much for coming on, Rob. Is there best place to follow you on like social media?
Yeah, Instagram, Dad the Best I Can, and definitely check out Instagram, BYLR Radio is where they're putting a lot of their content there. That's awesome. And that's a great story, too. You shared, I mean, I even get choked up hearing about a dad with 6 kids and in the hospital. I can't even imagine. So that's awesome that you can spread the word on that. And much respect. I hope he's doing
well.
Yeah,
thank you. And you know what? I'm actually going to, I'm trying to pull up the website actually right now while we speak, so I can give the link. So it's bringyudihome.com, bringyudihome.com is the website if you want to donate. They've actually raised a good amount of money, but there's a lot of medical expenses and things going on, and actually there's a whole committee of some doctors and a lawyer that are actually the financial oversight committee that are making sure the funds are kind of administered correctly and not just going to be, you know, like wasted or spent on fancy right. stuff.
Well, yeah, if you have his address, send it my way. I'd love to send him a book. Just any kind of anything that can, you know, bring a smile to somebody's face, I think is helpful.
Sounds good.
Yep.
I'll connect you. And thank you so much for coming on and sharing. And I hope people check out the book and the podcast, Dad, the Best I Can. Thank you so much, Rob.
Thank you, Liren.
Thank you so much for listening to the episode. If you haven't yet joined the e-commerce mindset Facebook group, join the group where we kind of talk about all things e-commerce and Amazon. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Hope you got something out of it. And I will see you on the next episode of the e-commerce mindset podcast.